Welcome to A Minute to Midnight. This is Tony bringing you part two of a three-part interview series that I did with Gil Brassard, with the subject being Planet X. Now, if you enjoyed part one, I think you're going to find part two absolutely fascinating. Now, you may not necessarily agree with all that Gil concludes in this, but you're going to find it a fascinating interview, I believe. So hold on to your hats, and here we go with part two. We're welcoming Gil Brassard back for part two of a fascinating interview series about Planet 7X or Planet Nibiru or Planet X, whatever you want to call it. So thank you, Gil, to be back here, and we'll continue from where we left off.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure, and I'm glad to be back a second time. On our first interview, we talked about the biblical accounts. Now we can touch on the secular accounts on where it's documented in recent history. And the last one we stopped was at Yeshua's sacrifice, proving how a double eclipse is not possible in a normal circumstance. It had to be a third object. Well, 395 years later was the Mayan event.
Okay.
Archaeologists was able to prove that the Mayans, about 75 to 80% of the population, died out because of a massive drought that killed their crops, and they could not sustain a population as large as that. And that was proven out just within the last 25 years or so. Now we know what caused that massive drought.
Okay.
And that was around 707 AD. And 347 years after that was our Chinese guest star in 1054, which was mislabeled. This section of it was mislabeled as a supernova. Well, come to find out, the supernova was seen 2 to 3 months earlier than the typical data that's presently showing, which is now redefined as a unknown object. You can find these scientific papers where it's gives you this data. The scientific white paper is called the Reevaluation of Eastern and Western Records of the Supernova 1054. This was given to the Dublin Institute of Advanced Studies. And this object was seen for 26 months, 13 months coming in and 13 months leaving. And after we plotted the segment of his course, it shows that it crosses Earth's path twice.
Well, that's pretty significant.
With a roughly 150 to 152-day separation between entry and exit on Earth's orbital path. The exiting is in the month of Passover, March or April scenario. And this happened multiple times. And we found 14 events in the biblical records,
which we covered in part one. Yep.
And without this hard data, we wouldn't have a model to do an overlay into the biblical records to prove out these accounts. And after this, we start to go into the dark ages. 402 years later, in 1456, we have a painting. This painting shows, it is first documented, people say that this was Halley's Comet in the painting. Well, I have a problem with that, because there's two objects showing like a tail of a comet in the painting.
Very interesting.
And the circumstances in the painting don't relate to Halley's Comet.
Okay, yeah.
They're showing starvation or famine of some type, because they're holding their stomachs, the people in the painting. You see trees snapped in half like from a massive earthquake or winds.
Wow.
Then you have uplifted ground where the town is raised.
Far out.
You have fiery hail coming from heaven that's putting some of the buildings on fire. And you can tell that there was an earthquake because some of the buildings are knocked down.
Wow.
That's not typical with Halley's Comet.
Do you know where people can actually see this picture?
Well, it's in the book for the PDF if they wish to download the PDF, or it's in, I forgot what museum it's in.
Okay, but it's in your PDF file.
Yes, it's in year 1456.
Great. So people should download Gill's PDF file. Great. Yep. And I'll leave a link to where they can do that.
Yeah, it's planet7x.net. At the bottom of it, there's two different links where they can download a lot of the data. That's for free.
Great.
And so this was during the Dark Ages. And this is one of the reasons why it was called so dark, because it was devastating to the local misinhabitants of Earth in that region of Europe and such. And then when we go back, the next event was 241 years later in 1697. Well, this was during the time of Newton. This is about the mid-age of Newton's reign on Earth. Well, we have a wood carving from Germany that shows two objects the size of the sun showing extreme brightness, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And the people on Earth are pointing to only to the object to the right. So this object, which they claim was a comet, well, if you know anything about the size of comets, it wouldn't be the same size as the sun.
Hmm.
That would make it almost equal. Remember, the moon and the sun are equal in size visually.
Yeah.
So this object roughly would have to be, this object was about 8 million miles away at the time that it passed, if it was roughly seven times the diameter of Earth.
Yeah.
And it would give you a visual perspective of equal to the size of the moon and the sun.
So just for people, why would the orbit be different each time? Like you're saying it's further away, and then other times it's come between Earth and the moon. How does that work?
Well, the orbit of this object holds just like a train on a track. It's always going to pass in the same track. But Earth has 12 months that it's orbiting around the sun in a different position.
Yeah.
So Earth can be in a different position at the time of the crossing. But that's where we have meteor showers later on, months later, that end up causing devastation. Now, Earth would still go through a drought and still suffer bird and fish kill. This is why the ancient legend associate bad luck with comets. Because this object looks like a comet from a distance, but it's many times larger.
Except it wouldn't have looked like a comet, though, when it came between Earth and the moon, though, would it?
Exactly. It would have looked like a planet-sized object, but yeah. They didn't have the word planet yet in their vocabulary.
How long ago was the last time you believe it would have actually passed between Earth and the moon?
Oh, that would have been Hezekiah's time. Last time the Earth tilted, from what I can record, was
you're getting a bit distorted there. I don't know what just changed, but your voice just suddenly went distorted.
Okay, I'm sorry. The last time that I see that it was recorded was when Earth tilted. The last time was Hezekiah.
Yeah, see, I'm just kind of laying the ground, because many people will be going, hang on, it can be quite confusing. You know, so just kind of clarifying those points. And, of course, our written history is so much better in the last few hundred years than it was in Hezekiah's day. So, yeah.
But keep in mind, we had religious authorities or the government around this time period, and they did censoring.
Yeah.
They would pick up any document. They were, because that's what the scientists say, because when they were looking at the scientific paper, they were looking for a supernova. And they claim, I mean, they make this point, this outright point, that it's mysteriously lacking in the European records due to censorship, is what they attributed to. Either that or it was a volcano that darkened the skies for 26 months, which is unlikely.
Yeah.
So they clearly point that it was censorship. Well, keep in mind, the scientists felt that they were looking for a supernova. The church knew that it was this object because they have documented records of it. That's why you have the Vatican spending $30 million on an observatory in Arizona.
Yeah. You believe that's what they're looking at?
You have their own words saying that. You have one of their head astronomers, Malachi Martin, that says that that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
And that they found it. This happens to be the same region of space that the Voyager and Pioneer probes went. This is the constellation Sagittarius. That's south of the universe.
See, I find it really interesting. I actually remember in the early 1980s, them saying that the scientists saying they thought they'd found another planet in our solar system. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting. And then it suddenly disappeared. You never heard anything from it again. It's like they're hiding something that they discovered, perhaps.
Well, you also got to watch out for disinformation. When you read the, once they wanted to draw the public off of a track, they published things in the Washington Post that they said that they found something in the constellation Orion. But that's not south of the universe, and that's not where the astronomers said. Well, that's not where they sent the Pioneer probes.
Okay.
Remember, they sent the first two opposite of each other.
Right.
And that gave them the signal which direction to send the other two probes. One probe was speeding up and one was slowing down. Gravity is tugging at it, or the magnetic pull of it is tugging at it, speeding up a probe and slowing down the other one that was going opposite direction. That's where they sent that, and that was during the direction of Sagittarius. Anytime they want to point you in opposite direction, they'll point you to constellation Orion. That's false information.
Right.
90% of all the data is pointing to one constellation, and all of the hard data points to only one constellation. That's Sagittarius. That is south of the universe. You have, three white paper reports of the Asians. You have two modern-day scientific reports saying the orbits of comets are warped in that region of space. You have 14 biblical accounts that points to the same region of space. You have five secular regions of history that point to that region space. We have all of this scientific data and biblical data. This is not an accident. You cannot repeatedly get the data correct that matches the Chinese model, having the orbital mechanics correct, Kepler's laws of planetary motion, the sequence of events between siding and tilting and meteor shower and droughts, having that all correct in the proper sequence without them witnessing a real event, because they didn't have the science to fake it.
Yeah. And speaking about faking science, I mean, I see all over the internet there's people claiming to have seen Planet X, and then there's the Google Sky thing that they had a blacked out piece, and then you see this winged object in there suddenly appears. I mean, I've not seen anything convinced me at all. They've all seemed like pretty dodgy videos and different things. What do you think about all of this? Has there been any actual sightings? Are we really heading towards it soon? And if so, why?
Well, there's sightings, but they're keeping it quiet. The Vatican has sightings. The NASA has sightings. But in the public realm, there is no sightings in the public realm.
So they're all hoaxes or all the public ones?
Yeah, most of the public are not. They're not even reached a level of amateur astronomer where they can tell what a a sun dog is yet. If they go look in Wikipedia, they'll see numerous different types, and you have to have the right conditions for a sun dog, and it's a mirage. A mirage looks extremely real, but guess what? You can't focus a telescope on it and get detailed surface pictures of a planet because it goes right through. It's like looking at fog. You can't focus on fog, okay? So there is no, until there's 2 to 3 million amateur astronomers. When this appears to us, someone in the astronomy community would take you detailed pictures that you can tell this is a planet.
Yeah.
It will not be taken from an iPhone and as the first level of evidence.
Yeah.
No, it's going to look like a star first. A star that's about equivalent to Jupiter in the nighttime sky, just like you look at Jupiter at night.
Yeah.
But it'll be as bright as Venus.
Okay, yeah.
And that's how you know that this is not your typical object. Because any astronomer, amateur or professional, can look at the stars and tell you which one's Jupiter and which one's Venus.
Yeah.
Because of the size and their reference of brightness. Well, this object is going to meet both of those. And keep in mind now, I've had comments from retired NASA engineers that's called me that said, I connected the dots for them, that now it makes sense to them on the projects that they were working on, that this object is real to them.
Well, that sure says something.
And if we run the model back, normal Kepler laws of planetary motion and everything, when it reached the orbit of Neptune, it would take 16 years to reach the sun.
Okay.
When the Voyager and Pioneer probe saw it, it was like 24 to 25 years outside our solar system. When it got to Neptune's orbit, it takes 16 years for it to reach us. That's roughly year 2000 to 2001. That would take 16 years. That meant, hey, guess what? We're here now.
Right. So you're expecting us to see it in 2016. Is that what you're saying?
2016, 2017. Visually, we'll start to see it, but we'll probably, there's a good chance. Remember, I don't have a crystal ball. I can't predict the future.
Yeah.
I'm just going with data, and this is an estimate, an educated guess off of the data.
Yeah.
My full estimate, I gave a window of 2013 to 2030 as a full possible. Now, anybody that can guess a window of return on an object we have yet to see, that's hitting the bullseye, if you can guess it within that in astronomical terms.
Yeah.
But the biblical kind of narrows these things down a little bit further. I believe it has to either happen on a Sabbath or a Jubilee year, right after those two are finished.
Yeah.
Well, a Sabbath year is just about finished with.
Yeah.
And we're going into a Jubilee year.
Though there is some, I'm not sure that it's the Jubilee year is absolutely pinpointed to be definitely this year. Some people say it is, and some people say it's not a Jubilee year this year. So
right.
I'm a little bit confused on that one. But
I have certain markers using astronomy and certain events that took place, like the Niebuhr disk. Also, when the Second Temple was destroyed.
Yeah.
The Second Temple was not destroyed in 70 AD. It was 68 AD.
Okay.
The Jews have outside records that state this. Now, within that records, the reason why I'm qualifying it was 68. Because they documented a comet.
Okay.
Before they were attacked.
Mm.
And they said it was a Jubilee.
Ah, I didn't know that.
The comet signified to them that's something terrible. Well, guess what? When I go back into the records, there's no comet that crossed within visual sight of Earth, its inhabitants, in year 70. But guess what? In 68, that was Halley's Comet.
Ah, well, that's certainly interesting.
And
puts a spin on it.
And they started to fight at the beginning of the Hebrew year. It took the Romans, you go back in the Romans record, it said it took 5 months of fighting.
Mm, yeah.
And the Jews said on the 9th of Av is when the temple fell.
Yep, yeah, that's right. Yep, I was aware of that one.
Well, guess what? It matches the records from the beginning of the year with the sighting of Halley's Comet. Ah. 5 months later, it's a year of Av, the month of Av, and the ninth of Av with 5 months span in between it.
Wow.
It also marks a jubilee at the beginning of that.
Okay.
And we have, in other words, with the Niebuhr disk, we can go back now and calculate Joseph's father, which was Jacob, yeah. I believe. And they said 400 years, who was renamed Israel. Israel would be 400
yeah.
years in,
yeah.
In the, without before entering Canaan. Well, guess what? He said when you enter Canaan, it would be your first jubilee.
Interesting, yeah.
Well, according to Niebuhr disk, we can calculate when they entered Canaan. This next jubilee is 70 jubilee, the 70th jubilee.
Yes, yep.
It is also the 70th year in 1947 when it was declared on paper to become a country.
Yeah, 47, 48. Yep.
And the Bible says, this generation shall not die out before all is fulfilled.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
At the age of accountability is 12 and 13.
Yeah.
For a male, depending on the way you count, on whether the old way or the new, or new way.
Yeah.
So that means they're 83 years old in 2016. We can't go to the next jubilee. There'll be 133.
Unless the generation starts from Jerusalem being captured in 1967, because some people say that is when to start the generation rather than 1948. So, which would take us to 2028 or so.
But that doesn't line up with the past jubilees that I would get, that
right.
I could spot, which was documented.
So, if we don't see Planet X in
yeah,
if we don't see Planet X in 2016 or 2017, what then, are you saying that there's gonna
then that would prove that we don't have the jubilee, correct?
Yeah. Okay.
Because remember CO3 and 4, CO3 is economic collapse.
Yeah.
Seal 4 mentions war and famine. Well, for his, the Almighty is not going to call his people on a cell phone and say, prepare finances and food.
Yeah.
Because he already told you to do this on a jubilee and a Sabbath year.
Yeah.
Says, get out of debt, prepare
yeah.
your finances, and stock up food for each of those years.
Yeah.
So his people already prepared during those years for Seal 3 and 4. So I expect CO3 and 4 to happen, either Sabbath or Jubilee.
Yep.
So if we have the Jubilee right, and CO5 is a peace agreement, CO6 is the first meteor shower, which happens in March. Well,
Why March?
That's what the Chinese records show. That is Passover, March or April.
Right.
Now, I'm not specifically saying March. I'm saying it has to happen in the month of Passover falls in between March and April, in between
yeah.
those two. And it can vary up to, depending on the equinox and whether or not the grain is ripened or not. Because it's something you have to visually check out. You can't predetermine date ahead of time.
Yeah.
So this is going to coincide near Passover. Elijah and Moses show up for Passover meal, the feast. And I can roughly calculate 3.5 days later is when the crossing of this planet is going to happen, which is CO6, the meteor shower. And 152 1/8 day later is the second meteor shower, which is at nighttime. The first one is during the daytime. The second one is at nighttime.
Okay.
And this is when a fiery mountain, a large meteor, the size of a mountain, hits the earth. You have a meteor shower also, but within that meteor is one large object, which will hit Earth so hard, and it's going to hit one of our oceans, which I believe is the Pacific Ocean. That tidal wave is going to cover many continents. It says Earth will wobble like a drunkard, like a hut in the wind. Every island and mountain is moved, and Earth is split.
Mm-hmm. So are you expecting that to happen this year?
No, next March or April, possibly.
In 2017?
Yeah, the Jubilee has to be completed. Then that following Passover would be the crossing.
Okay.
If this Jubilee is correct.
Okay. Yeah. So how long before that occurs do you think we actually see in the sky something without a, well, firstly, the astronomers, and then secondly, the naked eye?
Well, a naked eye should see a star anywhere from between 6 to 9 months, depending whether or not you have perfect skies or not. If you have light, a lot of light, light pollution, you may see it later than that. But at the earliest, it would be 9 months. But by December, we should see something. That's when we know if we have, in other words, if you don't see economic collapse and famine, then it's not going to be this year. That has to happen first within this Jubilee, if we got the Jubilee correct. That would define us having the Jubilee correct.
I mean, it's certainly looking like we're going to see economic collapse. We've sort of been harping on about that and telling people to get prepared for quite a while now. And, you know, all the signs are pointing to it likely happening this year. But, of course, we can't say that with any certainty.
Right. Now, what's also interesting, the data qualifies the event we weren't aware of. Remember, Earth tilted 3 to 4 times. This next time, this planet is going to pass between the moon and the Earth again.
So that'll be the first time it's done that since Hezekiah's time.
Correct.
Yeah.
So the visual respect, you would look at an object almost 50 times larger than the moon, roughly, approximately.
Yeah.
Remember the old saying where it says man's heart will fail from what they anticipate that comes?
Yeah, from Book of Revelation, yep.
This is visually going to be a stimulating event.
It's actually Mark chapter 21, not Revelation, says that. Yeah,
anyway, okay, good,
good. Yep.
And then Earth will start to tilt. Now, the dangerous part is you need to be on Earth where the pivot point of the tilt is. And the biblical data is giving us where the point's going to tilt at. That's in the Middle East. Around Jerusalem area is going to be the pivot point of the tilt.
Okay.
If you're 90 degrees from that pivot point of the tilt, which puts you about midway of South America or the East Coast, off the East Coast of America through Greenland, you draw a line all the way around the globe that puts you smack dab in the middle of Australia, near the Philippines, right down through Alaska. That's where the high winds are going to be. Right. If you're 90 degrees from it, you're looking at Earth moving 1,800 miles in 6 hours. That's roughly 300 mile an hour winds on open water.
Wow.
And you're looking at the, on land, you're looking at probably close to 150 mile an hour winds. You're looking at Earth that's coming to a standstill for 12 hours. You know, it's going to slow. And so the bulge of water around the equator, which is 12 kilometers, will start to dissipate towards the North and South Pole. You're looking at coastal flooding. When Earth starts to tilt, you're looking at water that normally was standing still and the continents are moving, but the water standing still. Therefore, you have a tidal surge going into the land 400 to 500 miles inland.
Man, massive.
The Bible says not to be anywhere on the coastline globally. It specifically says that in the text.
Hmm.
The safe place to be would be in Jerusalem on a mountaintop. It specifically states 3 cities on the coastline of Jerusalem that are devastated by a tidal surge. Tel Aviv is one. Ashdod is another one. And then some other name is given. There are coastal cities on the coastline of Israel.
Mm.
If you're around Jerusalem, and it says in Joel chapter 2, I believe it is, verse 30 and 31. Matter of fact, 32. Well, matter of fact, 30 to 31 is interesting. It says, I shall give a sign in the heaven, upon the earth, blood and fire, and columns of smoke.
Yeah.
The sign in heaven is our planet.
Yeah.
Columns of blood and smoke is a meteor shower or volcanoes going off. next line it says the sun is turned into darkness and the moon into blood. That's a double eclipse. You can't have a double eclipse unless it's a third object. It says before the coming of the awesome day of Yehovah.
Yeah.
Now verse 32 says, and I shall be that, wait, no, it says it, and it shall be that everyone who calls on my name, Yehovah, shall be delivered. For on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem, there shall be an escape. As Yehovah has said, among the survivor, or you can put that word remnant, who Yehovah has called. In Revelation, it says a remnant is delivered to a place of safety in the wilderness.
Yeah.
Wilderness has never been defined as heaven. This is the first taking away. The second taking away is at the end of the 3.5 years of the Great Tribulation. But he says, if you make it to the end without being in this place of safety, count yourself lucky. Very few of you will.
So you think the Planet X kicks off the tribulation sort of thing? And then,
without a doubt.
Yep, okay. Yep. What about in Revelation, isn't there somewhere where it talks about the four winds being held back, or in silence or quietness?
Well, it says the four angels hold back the winds. Well, the only way the winds stop moving on Earth is if Earth's rotation stops.
Right.
And this is tells you, and keep in mind, it also states in other areas of the scripture that he made noon into darkness and midnight into light. It tells you there's remember now after a 12-hour delay in Earth's rotation, guess what? Midnight is daylight, and noon is nighttime.
Fascinating. Yeah, of course.
If you read about the wise virgins, five wise and five foolish.
Yeah.
The difference between the two, remember, it says Yeshua comes mid of night, not midnight. Midnight is a modern term, meaning 6 hours after sunset.
Yeah, yeah.
Mid of night is a different term. That night is going to be 12 extra hours. So he's coming mid of 24 hours nighttime. The wise virgins have two portions of oil. The generators globally for the 3 days prior to the arrival of this object crossing our path, all generators globally got to be shut off. Because as we're entering the tail of the plasma, it's like having an EMP wave.
Okay, interesting concept.
Otherwise, it'll burn up the generator. So we're burning oil lamps because there's not enough batteries in the world to help out everybody.
Interesting interpretation.
If you read that parable carefully, the wise have two portions of oil, not one. The foolish have one. A portion of oil one portion takes you through a normal nighttime of 12 hours. The wise have two. After they burnt the first portion of oil, they're trimming the wicks and refilling it and relighting it. And the foolish are asking for it and say they don't have enough, go back and buy some. Now, as they lit their lamps, a shout goes out, the groom has arrived. And only the wise go out and meet him. These are the bridesmaids of a wedding. The bride don't carry lamps in a Hebrew wedding, only the bridesmaids. See, this is similar to a wedding, he said.
Yeah, yeah.
And the bride is only from the 12 tribes of Israel, except for Dan. Okay? Yeah. Dan is not mentioned.
Yeah.
The bridesmaids can be from any tribe.
True. Yep.
And there's five times more of them than the bride.
Yep, true. Yep.
And so they're brought to a place in the wilderness by Yeshua. Yeshua brings them to a place where he has prepared for them, where they stay there 1,260 days.
See, I've certainly never heard anyone interpret this like you are at the moment. It's actually really, really interesting. It's a completely different way of looking at it.
It's a real even. You got to take. See, we couldn't interpret Revelation without understanding the Old Testament clearly, and we couldn't have done this without the data provided by the Chinese records, that these events, these are data points. These are not random stories.
Yeah.
These stories give us the data points to understand the last book of the Bible, because we're going to go through similar events.
Yeah.
And he's preparing us. He says, if you follow my instructions, he says, prepare food on the Sabbath and the Jubilee and supplies that you need, because you're going to go through a terrible time coming up. He says, this next event, the one in Revelation described, the Great Tribulation, is the worst event in all of Earth's history, it says.
Yeah, yeah.
That's greater than Noah's flood.
Yeah.
You're fixing to live through the time of the most extreme event in biblical records.
Yeah. And most people won't make it.
That is correct.
Yeah.
It's only a remnant out of the subset of the entire body that's following his exact instructions. Because they've forsaken his instructions. They said, we don't need to understand the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Well, without it, you're not going to understand the last book. And if you forgive his instructions, remember, Yahweh said, these are my instructions. You will follow them forever. A lot of people said, well, you don't follow with the Jews. He didn't say that. He says, these are my instructions, and you follow them forever. They're rehearsal patterns.
Yeah.
That protects you if you follow them.
Yeah.
So no one has an excuse when they go up in front of him, says, well, how come you didn't pull me out of the meteor?
He
said, how come you didn't follow my instructions? And then if you...
And let's face it, the church as a whole is asleep. Everyone's in a stupor. It's like no one's... As we're getting closer and closer to these signs, and now whether it ends up being in 2017 or whether it's 2028, or whether it's a thing that builds between now and then, I'm not exactly sure. But the point is that you can sense that it's getting really close. And yet when everyone should be awake in the church, the majority of Christians are asleep, it seems.
Do you think it's just a lucky guess that they consistently had correct 14 events that match the model?
No.
Do you think it's an accident that they say it in the end times they would cut your heads off? We're seeing it in the newspaper today.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
You think it's an accident they said you have global economic collapse? That's never happened before.
Can see it. It's inevitable. You just, every which way you look, I don't know how people can't see it, but yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
It can't go another 20 years or 10 years. We may be a year off, but I seriously don't think so.
Yeah.
Because if you take into account, remember, this is Jacob's trouble.
Yeah.
Jacob had trouble with Esau. Esau represents the Muslim faith.
Yeah.
Remember, during Yeshua's time, they said in the future, they will worship a God that our fathers knew not of.
Yeah.
Muhammad came 600, and Allah came 600 years later.
Yeah.
This is the God that their fathers knew nothing about. So when did that start? Well, they declared war on us in 2001. Okay? Their year started around Passover of 2001.
Right.
And they sent an edict or a request or whatever you want to Bush saying, if you switch to Islam, we won't declare war. But if you turn us down, we will openly declare war, a jihad against Jews and Christians, which is Jacob. The war against Jacob started in 2001. So if you look at seal one is a war is declared against Jacob. Seal two is peace is taken from the earth.
Yeah.
Okay. In 1 hour, the jets were out of the air and people were on terrorist alert globally.
Yeah.
Seal three is economic collapse.
Yeah.
Then four is famine. Okay, now.
Okay, we'll stop it there, Gil, because I can see we've still got plenty more we can carry on with. So we'll turn that into part three. So we'll just leave it here for part two and carry on in the next one.
Sounds good.
Okay, so that was part two. We have a third part, which I hopefully will get out pretty soon as well, and it's also fascinating,
as part two was, I think you will agree. Okay, if you haven't already done so, perhaps you would like to subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you don't miss it. Also, go to aminutetomidnight.com. We have articles there and we post all our videos on there. There's also a donate button, which we really appreciate it if people help out there. And all the music on all episodes of A Minute to Midnight are my own creations. I write and record all our music. And we have a link to rockshoresounds.com on the A Minute to Midnight website. And you can download the music and also sound effects packs. And if you use musical sound effects from rockshoresounds.com, you are directly helping to support aminutetomidnight.com as well. So until next time, this is Tony signing off for A Minute to Midnight.